Welcome to the Wolf Whistle for our third edition, and we are joined by no other than 1980 League Cup winner Colin Brazier. Colin.
Hi Jason.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good, good, good. Colin, you are the first, let me work this out. Yes, you are the first Wolves Trophy winner that we've had on the Wolf Whistle. Obviously, good friend of mine as well. I know Colin very well. 91 appearances for Wolves, 2 goals. So, Colin, who was your team growing up?
Well, I was born down by the Blues ground in Smallheath. My dad was a massive Blues fan, so we went to more or less every home game and nearly every reserve game that was going.
Right.
So, as a lad, I always followed Everton. Alan Ball, my all-time favourite player.
What a player.
Yeah, fantastic. And that was it then, really. It was, you know, Blues till I was sort of, went to the Wolves, really.
Because the internet's got quite a posh analogy. It says you was born in Solihull. Is that incorrect, then?
That's what I told them to look posh.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So it was old Smallheath.
Smallheath. Peaky Blinder guy, really, at the end of the day.
That's it?
Yep.
So obviously you went to play, we'll come on to this a bit later, but you went to play for Blues, obviously, at the towards the end of your career. Was your father still alive then?
Yes, yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So, no, just going back to your father, actually, I know he was a massive, massive influence on your career, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, he was. My dad was a massive, gentle giant. He took me everywhere from the age of 6, and he was always there for me. Went to every game I sort of played. He'd travel down to Southampton and bring me back home. He's one of them guys, though, he never ranted and raved at me when I was on the pitch. He'd wait till I come off half-time, have a quiet word, and then I'd go back on. You know what I mean? There's never any animosity about how I played or what I did. Where other guys, their dads were shouting and screaming at them constantly, knocking them off the game. He'd just do it nice and quietly and just help me on there. Even when I was in the professional game,
brilliant.
He said he'd look after me.
So obviously when you eventually signed for Birmingham, Was that, you know, but he couldn't believe it, could he?
Oh, well, yeah, he enjoyed the fact, and I enjoyed the fact, when I went there, I ended up playing centre-forward for them, and it was a delight for me to score a goal at the Tilton End and wave to the fans, you know, just waving to myself as a kid, really.
Of course,
yeah,
wow.
So that was quite good.
Yeah, amazing. So, let's rewind the clock back, Colin. Quite a few years, obviously. So, where did you actually start your junior football?
All around the sort of the local sides, but then I played for. I was one of the youngest players to play for Alf Church, who had quite a few professionals from the amateur going to professional side. They were a very, very good side at the time. And then I played for a side, Northfield Town, which where I was spotted from. And from Northfield, I joined the Wolves.
So which scout spotted you? Can you remember?
Oh, I cannot remember his name that many years ago.
See, for you, Colin, as well, which was quite interesting back then, which, you know, it's quite rare now. You was a bit of a utility player, wasn't you?
I was. I played sort of midfield quite a lot in my amateur side, but I mainly meant my mark being a centre-half, but in the amateur side, my game was going forward, and I said that the one season I scored 23 goals, I think, from centre-half.
What? From centre-half?
From centre-half. That was my main. You were let to play, you know, you could play, so I scored quite a few goals
because,
from centre-half.
Well, centre-halves now, it's get to the halfway line. If you go across it, you got a nosebleed.
Yeah.
So you was encouraged to go up there and get your head in on corners, etc. So, how old was you when you was actually signed by Wolves, Colin?
I was 18. I went to the. I was at the Wolves from like 16, but my dad wouldn't let me sign. He said, "You're not signing. You go and get a trade." So I became an apprentice plumber for the 2 years while I played with the Wolves on and off in the youth side, and then on my 18th birthday. Prior to that, I had 2 weeks holiday. From plumbing, which then I went to the Wolves for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Trained with the guys, and they said, well, after the 2 weeks, the Wolves said, we'll let you know whether we're going to sign you. And I said, oh, fair enough, like, you know, you get a bit blasé about these things coming and going. And then when I got home on the Friday night, about 6:30, I had a phone call from Derby County, and they said, would there be interest in signing you? Will you come down? And I said, yeah, well, I'll have words with you. By then, I hadn't heard anything from the Wolves. But then, funnily enough, 15 minutes later, the Wolves phoned me up and said...
You had a busy household that night, didn't you?
They said that we want to sign you. And I turned to my dad and said, you know, what do I do? I said, as I see it, Derby County then had Roy McFarlane and Colin Todd.
Wow, two big names. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I thought, God, if I go to Derby, I'm going to spend 10 years in the reserves. Where the Wolves, I thought, well, I've got more of a chance to break in at the Wolves.
To the first team.
Where they haven't got England professionals. They've got good players,
yep.
But they haven't got England internationals. So I plumb for the Wolves.
So the phone rung 15 minutes later. That was Derby. 15 minutes later, Wolves rung. I'm sure your dad was thinking, if I wait another 15 minutes, I might have blues on the phone.
Yeah, he might have done. He would have been happy with that. I'm sure he would have been happy, yeah.
That is brilliant. So, obviously, you had to cut your teeth, like you said, in the youth team initially, and then obviously once you signed the reserves. And I believe there was a certain game against Aston Villa, which really you did cut your teeth in.
Yeah, them days, you got to remember that I always think the reserve team games were the next best league to play. And you got the first division, then you got the reserves, then you got the second, because the players were coming into the reserves, injured players, getting fit. So you're playing against people like Kenny Dalglish and all the greats that were there about at the time, you know. So you were learning your trade, and these guys took the time to teach you your trade as well.
Yeah.
You were being knocked about, and this one time I was playing against this Andy Lockhead, and 10 minutes into the game, I've gone up to head the ball with him, and he's given me an elbow, smashed me in the face, cut my eye open, and as I'm on the deck, he's got his hand on my shoulder, pulled my shirt and told me, you don't do it that way, son, and he's pushed me away. Well, I shouted a few words at him, like, you know, and then it must be, I don't know, 15 minutes in the game again, he's gone up, I've gone up to hit the ball against him, his elbow, me dislocated my nose, and he's just grabbed my shoulder again and said, son, I've told you, you don't do it that way. And so I'm being patched up, and half-time comes, I walk off, and my dad's shouting, he says, Cole, you got to start looking after yourself, or you're going to get hurt here. So I'll get back on the pitch, and about sometime in the game I get a chance, and I got with Andy Lockhead, and I elbowed him and smashed him in the ear roll, and he went down with a scream, and then he got back up, and he said, that's the way to do it, son.
Brilliant.
So he was sort of teaching the hard side of the game, you know. Like, I always remember Francis Lee, playing against Francis Lee in the reserves, and you were playing against the world's England internationals, and I always remember him taking his time to tell you what you were doing wrong, pushing you into position and saying, do you know where I am? Because I know where you are, and all this. So he got you to think about the game, and you learnt about the game. Because the game's not just about playing. You know, the good players in the leagues, they're good thinkers of the game as well. And I think that's the difference between being a good amateur and a good professional, is how you think about the game, perceive the game as you're playing it.
Yeah.
And these old players who were coming down, dropping down the leagues and coming back from injury, like I said, like the Dalglishes of this world, who I got to play a few times in the first team, were like the best players that I'd ever played against.
Well, I think now, if you look at clubs, the under-23s really is the reserve team almost, but there's a lot of players there who are trying to break through, and it's not so much first team players who can't get a game anymore, and they tend to be on the peripherals of the first team and don't really get to play too much competitive football. But back then, obviously, like you said, it was a league in its own, wasn't it, I suppose?
Well, it was, but I think it's like when I was 14, which helped me out, I played Sunday football and I was playing against men. So when I went to school, I was like the man then, and I was knocking kids about. And that's how it was when you got into the reserves, you were playing against men, you were being knocked about. It's like now you look at a 16-year-old playing against a 16-year-old. The 17's playing against a 17. He's not learning anything. I don't think he's learning the game. He's not learning to be stronger and more powerful. They look like kids to me today, where when I was 16, 17, I felt like a man, you know. And it was such a much different game. You'd be knocked about, the tackling and the physical side was immense, you know. You come against people like Joe Jordan and whatever when you played, you know. if you didn't know how to look after yourself, you got destroyed by people like that.
Yeah, so people like Joe Jordan were real hard men, weren't they?
Super hard.
So you obviously play against them and you know you've had a game.
Yeah, I remember playing against Joe Jordan when he was at Man United, and I just remember coming off and the backs of my calves were just cut to pieces.
Really?
Because as you run away from me, he'd be at the back of your calves with his studs. You know, there's no sort of love lost when you were playing.
And the thing is now, rightly or wrongly, players are defended, aren't they? And, you know, they're defended on the pitch by the referee, clearly. You know, obviously, safety's very important. But not only that, by the cameras. There's cameras everywhere now. You can't get away with anything. When you was playing, Colin, there'd be one camera which would possibly put it on Match of the Day later. Yeah. And there wouldn't be 10 different angles of goals, of fouls, of, you know.
It is totally a different game. Like I said, if you caught anybody up to the neck heights, the referee would just give you a warning. If you went up past that, then you might get sent off, or you might get a booking.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You know, it was, at times, quite ferocious.
I can believe it.
But I think everything that went with the game, you know, especially the pitches. People say, what's the biggest difference in the game today? I think the pitches are the difference, you know what I mean? If we could have played on a Wembley pitch every day, the game would have been such a totally different game. As we played, it was the centre-half knocking the ball up to the centre-forward, who would knock it down to the midfield running on.
Yeah.
And that made it such a different game to where, you know, how many times would I touch a ball in a game? Probably 20 at the most, where you're getting centre-halves touching the ball 90% of the time these days, being played through them.
Yeah, definitely, that they are playing from the back, aren't they? And you can see where before, maybe in the 70s, you know, your centre-half was a bruiser, you know.
That's
why. And it's not really the case now. The centre-halves now could play, you know, as centre-forward, they're talented. And I think it's a different game. I think it's really difficult sometimes when they compare eras, and I think it's really unfair when they say, could the 1980 League Cup final winning team beat the, I don't know, 2003 Championship playoff team, whatever. Yeah. Because it's two different eras, it's two different, completely, like you said, completely different games.
Oh, yeah.
And I think now they are absolute athletes, and I'm not saying that the people from your era wasn't, but I think...
Yeah, people say that to me, but when we were at the Wolves, I always say to people, you know, the bloke that run the 4-minute mile, people today are not running that far under the 4-minute mile. We get in, play a game Saturday, be knackered. You get in Saturday, you're up and down the Cannock Chase. Then you'd be up on Tuesday, you'd be up and down the South Bank, you'd be running around with weights and doggies, running around the pitch. Then you'd be up the gym. It was constant. And the thing, what we were fit, but to me, the thing when I played Saturday, I never felt 100% fit because I was tired.
Really?
From what we did in the week. You know what I mean? It wore you down. We had a game against the reserves of a Thursday, and we kicked mumps off each other.
Yeah.
You know, that was a battle. That was like another game.
And I think that's the point I was alluding to, really, because now they've got all these supplements and, you know, they've got dietitians. Oh. Can you imagine how, obviously you guys were athletes, but can you imagine your, you know, the quality of your game now on this pitch? Because obviously you guys were clearly a skillful. But can you imagine now the quality, you know, like I said, with...
When you say, when you look at I look at some of the games at the YouTube, but when you look at George Best, and he's running through 6 inches of mud and whatever. But I think, for me personally, my problem was that I was a footballer, and I think, and it's not, you know, if I was playing to that today's game would suit me 100% better.
On these bowling greens?
Well, you look at, say, John McCall. John McCall was an out-and-out stopper.
Yeah.
I don't say, you know, he a good player and whatever for what he did.
Yeah.
But when I went there, I was a footballer, which that's why I never played 200 or 300 games.
Right.
Because I wanted to get the ball down and play.
Yes.
And that wasn't really that was frowned upon. As I said, I always remember one of my early reserve team games against the Villa. I got the ball off our goalkeeper. I played 3-1-2s. I went round the Villa goalkeeper, which was Jake Finlay, put the ball in the back of the net, and I thought, that'll show him what I can do.
Yeah.
And all I got was from the coach, Cole. What you got to remember is that there's a piece of string, it's tied round the post, and it's around your waist, and it extends to the halfway line. And that was all I got from scoring a goal like that.
After you scored.
And I thought, oh God, what have I done here?
Yeah.
And that was it. I wanted to play football, but when you play football, managers would look at you and say, percentage-wise, you might not trap that ball properly, you might not pass that ball properly, so just kick it out in the stand.
But do you think for your talent, Colin, because a lot of players I've spoke to from that era who played with you tell me how talented you was, how calm you was on the ball. Do you think maybe that you'd have probably been not so much, you know, a better midfielder maybe going forward rather than, because you did play most of your career as a defender?
Yeah, I don't really think I had the as you call it, the engine to be an out-and-out midfield player. I played a lot of games and I had some decent games, but I just love I like defending.
Yeah,
I like keep saying like blowing your own trumpet.
No, do it, Colin.
Just before Cyril Regis passed away, I was at Warsaw and I took my daughter and we were watching a game, and he came out. I hadn't spoke to Cyril for 10 years probably, and I introduced myself to him and he knew who I was. And he turned to my daughter and he said, God, I used to hate playing against your dad.
Wow.
Because he would never mix it. And my idea of playing against these big guys was to be around them.
Yes.
Not playing the heavy game.
Yeah, but to be nicking
the ball off them, to be in front of them, to make them not know where I was. And this is how I got the better of good players like Cyril.
Because Cyril was obviously a really, really strong player, wasn't he? So he probably actually suited his game to play against.
Powerful. If you just bounce off Cyril. So mine was to make them, like I said, learning the game off the old pros, that I would never let the centre forward know where I was. I'd be stepping in front of him so he'd change position where he didn't want to go. I'd be playing the mind game with him all the while, you know. But it wasn't, I think if I look back, I would have loved to play in today's game because it would have suited me more.
Yeah.
And to a point, the frustration got the better of me. And I always say to people, my biggest problem is I have my mum's mouth.
Right.
And I used to say what I thought.
Yeah.
And
then you got married.
Yeah.
And then that changes, doesn't it, then?
And then really, I think, you know, managers don't like someone that's outspoken about the game and about what's going on, where, you know, I should have left it, got myself the regular first team position, made it mine, and then I could have sort of said, well, you know, I could do this, I can do that, you know what I mean, rather than saying it when I wasn't a regular player.
Yes.
And like you say, I became a utility player, which is the worst thing that could ever happen to me. I just wanted to play.
Yep.
And that was the bad thing then. I should have said to the bosses, I'm a centre half, I'll wait for my chance, and that, you know.
Yeah, instead of either being pushed out. Yes. So what position, I mean, actually, we'll talk about your debut first, because we're overrunning ourselves, you know, we haven't even got to your debut yet. So as a 10 to 19 year old, Colin, 2nd of Feb 1977, you made your debut against Ipswich, didn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, what sort of experience was that for you?
It was one of them. It's what you've always dreamed of as a kid, and it was a bit nerve-wracking against Paul Mariner. And
you what a player Paul was.
Yeah. And I had an excellent game, and I'm always remembered for when fans talk to me, in the 6-yard box, the ball's just dropped down. I've just trapped it and backheeled it to Phil, the goalkeeper.
Who could obviously pick it up then.
And he just picked it up, like, rather than say that normal thing of welling it away. I just controlled it, being under pressure.
On my debut,
and that was it.
See, that could have gone either way. Obviously, you had the confidence to do it and the ability.
I just think it's one of them. It's a footballing brain. I always remember I played in the reserves against the Albion, and we were defending, and I trapped the ball on our goal line, and the centre forward came rushing in, and I knocked the centre forward on my goal line, and away I went. But to my footballing brain, it was, well, if I'm going to smash this ball away, this centre-half's going to become running in.
Yeah.
It's going to hit the centre-half and fly in the back of the net.
Yeah.
So I just calmly got the ball, nutmegged him, and away I went. And I got the biggest roasting that I'd ever had in my life.
Again.
You know, because percentage-wise, you know, it could have been a goal, but to my mind, it would have been a goal if I hadn't done what I did.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know.
It seems like you was wasted in defence, Colin.
Well, I loved it, and in my time at Wolves and Reserves, my best mate Mick Kearns, who played for Ireland
and Walsall.
It was one of them things where, you know, he saved my life because we had so much fun playing the reserves together.
Yeah.
You know, he used to give me pass me a ball, but I've got two centre forwards on me, and I used to whack the ball back a little bit harder, so he has to dive and catch it like. So playing in that, we got on really well, and saved each other's
bacon a few times. Yeah. I've met Mick, and I've got to say, I don't think I've seen anyone with as big a hands as Mick.
No.
They are like shovels. Yeah. And don't forget, back then, I was speaking to Lofty the other night, they didn't wear gloves.
No.
I mean, now they've got, strapping gloves, the lot, and didn't even wear gloves.
No, I'll say with Mick, we used to room together, and he was such a big lad. When he turned over in bed, it was like a whale breaching. I literally was in the other bed, and I turned over as well. He was that bloody big.
He was a big unit.
Yeah.
So, with regards to your position, Colin, obviously, you wished you said it had been a bit stronger and said I'll be a centre-half. So, do you think that's maybe why, Wolves especially, to be honest, there wasn't that many substitute appearances, but do you think you could have held a first-team spot down for longer if, you hadn't been dragged out? Because I suppose back then, what positions did you play for Wolves?
I did from goalkeeper to centre-forward.
So you played in goal as well?
Yeah, played in goal. Well, when we went to, played against AEK Athens.
Yes.
I'm just trying to think of the goalkeeper then.
What year?
80 in the 80s.
Gary Pearce?
No.
Paul Bradshaw
got a bad stomach, so I had to go in goals for him, and we drew 2-2. But I played in goals for Birmingham City. I played centre forward, centre. I played all over the place, really.
Flipping heck! So have you literally played in every position?
I've
always
played in every position. Wow. I would say the only thing I'd ever played was central midfield for the Wolves.
Everywhere else, central.
Yeah.
So obviously. The Wolves, the pinnacle. If you walk through the subway now, Colin, I've took the picture before and sent it to you. You're actually there.
Yeah.
Picture you in the subway depicting that day in 1980. Obviously, you've still got your winner's medal from that fantastic day where we beat the European champions. How difficult was it for you to be on the bench at such an occasion?
Well, Norman Bell. Was about, and Norman, it was either I think or me or Norman Bell who were going to be sub that day. So to be honest, it was better than being 13th man.
Completely. But
it was one of them. If I'd have had 2 minutes on that pitch, then I would have been a part of that win. It was great to be there, and I always remember walking down the tunnel and walking onto the pitch.
Was your dad there? Your parents?
Yeah, all the family were there, and the Wembley turf was fantastic, and I was kicking the ball about, and I thought to myself, God, I could do anything today with this ball. And then all I did was run up and down the touchline, and I never got on.
That must be so disappointing, Colin, like you said, because, obviously you're ball-playing centre-half. Maybe, just thinking about it now, maybe he was named substitute, Colin, because of the fact that Norman Bell was probably... What position did Norman play?
Centre-forward, Norman was.
So Norman was a centre-forward.
Yeah.
With yourself, they knew if Norman got injured, you'd be on. If
I'd say I played in every position. So
Emlyn Hughes got injured that day, you'd have come on. If Melly's had get, so you could have played in any position. So I think that was why you was sub, maybe.
I think it was. It was one of them things where it was a great occasion. It was fantastic. Go to Wembley, it was fantastic, but. Not to be on that pitch for 30 seconds, it reduced the meaning of it. I wasn't a part of it, I've got a trophy, but I'm not a part of that trophy. It's awkward to say,
just looking back now, surely it wouldn't have hurt John Barnwell, 30 seconds to go.
Of course not.
Running down the clock just to say, go on, Carl, fill your boots. And even if you didn't touch the ball. But,
it would have made no difference. I was on the pitch and I was a part of it now.
But, Colin, you were still a part of it. You've still got your medal, haven't you, Colin?
Yeah.
Still got your medal. So, did you play in the earlier rounds?
Yeah, a couple of the earlier rounds, yeah.
That's it. Look, so you are a part of it, but it must be so frustrating, like you said.
Oh yeah.
That pitch would have been a snooker table for you, wouldn't it, to play on?
Yeah, as I said, you just gone there. I could have pinged that ball all over the place. It would have been, you just know, you just had that feeling of, you know, how good it would have been. But it was a great time for the Wolves fans. It was afterwards, on the coach and the, you know. And I said, I just don't understand the teams today that don't want to get to Wembley for the fans, because that's what about getting to Wembley's for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For the fans to go down there and patch the day, because there's no better fans than the Wolves fans. You know, they're a bunch of lunatics, you know what I mean? They're great people.
Well, for you, Colin, obviously, there's not many players who've played for sort of three Midlands clubs, and you played for obviously Wolves, Blues and Warsaw. We'll come on to that later, because the move after Wolves, it was Ian Greaves, I believe, that let you go. And you had a strange move then, really, looking back at it, to America.
Yeah.
So how did the move to America come about? And you know, why did you leave Wolves? Why did Ian Greaves let you go?
Well, the Wolves went on tour the previous year to America. And I think we were out there for 2 weeks. And I came back home in the sort of the close season. And I was flying, I was at Birmingham Airport, and we took off, and the plane had got a cracked windscreen. So we landed in Luton, and then when we were at Luton waiting, I got a phone call from America saying, would you like to come over and play for us? So I was going to Madeira with the wife and her mum and dad.
The first wife.
First wife, yeah. And I sort of said to them, well, when I get to Madeira, I'll give you a call. So when I went to Madeira, I'll give him a call. I said, we want you over. Can you come over and play for us? So I said, well, when? They went, now. So I left my wife with
on holiday.
I left my wife and
Colin, this is probably why she's known as now your first wife.
Probably good. And I flew back home. I flew to America the next day. I played a game for the Jacksonville team. I flew back home, got all my gear together, and I flew back to America, and I stayed out there till the end of September, came back, and then the following season, we had Greaves come as a manager, and I remember it was one of them things. A Tuesday, we were away playing away. I scored 3 goals in the reserves. Then we were at home on the Saturday. I scored 2 goals, and then on the Tuesday night, I scored another hat trick. And Jim Greaves called me and he said, do you want the good news or the bad news? I said, well, I ain't really bothered now, boss. What is it? He said, well, the bad news is I'm letting you go. And he said, the good news, you can go back to America if you like. I went, great. And that was Tuesday night, and I was back in America Thursday.
So you scored 8 goals in a week.
Nine
goals in a week, sorry.
No, 8 goals, you're right, yeah.
8 goals in a week, and then...
They give him the sack.
Wow.
Well, that's what I class it as, the sack.
So, still at this point, because I know, is your wife still in Madeira at this?
Yeah, she probably is.
So, obviously,
you... Madeiran bloke.
Did obviously your family join you in America?
Yeah, my wife came out, yeah.
And how long were you out there for, Colin?
I had two seasons. On the second season, when the Wolves let me go, we had basically New York Cosmos were found to be cheating, playing... illegible players, so they closed the league down.
Such as Pelé and Beckenbauer.
Yeah, yeah. And they closed the league down, so basically all right. We all had to come back home, or else we'd have stayed out there.
And
because I played against Steve Daly, and
of course
all the lads out there played against them all.
So what sort of English players were over there at the time? There was obviously Daly.
Yeah, but in our team we had Bomber Brown.
Yeah.
And
West Brom.
Yep. And the Scottish international who played for Nottingham Forest, midfield.
Burns?
No.
No?
No.
Archie Gemmell. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we had a few Scottish lads, but then we had, we were over there at the time with the Argentinian War, and we had 3 Argentinians playing for us.
Right.
And the one lad, funnily enough, was called George Berrio.
Brilliant. Yeah. Without the George Berrio, without the afro.
I was earning £200 a week at the Wolves. I was on £1,000 a week in America.
Lived in what year?
91.
£1,000 a week in 91? Yeah. So that would have...
Yeah, and then I said, lived on a golf course there, Bay Meadows Golf Course, 2 minutes from the beach. And then we used to have, go out for 2 weeks at a time. An away game used to be 8,000 miles.
Of course, because obviously you have to fly everywhere there.
Canada, way up past Toronto. But it was an amazing time. Played apart from Pelé, played against Cruyff, Naiskins, Gert Muller, Beckenbauer, So it was, well, it was a lovely time out there.
So I suppose, although it really didn't... I mean, look, you had a great career at Wolves, you know, but the 91 appearances will tell you that. But I suppose in America, did you find you was playing a lot more football? What was the quality of the pitches like? Did it suit your game better?
Well, basically, Jacksonville had a grass pitch.
Yep.
And then you play on a lot of AstroTurf, or basically you play on American baseball ground. So you'd be running down the pitch, and all of a sudden the hump.
Yes.
You'd run up over the hump where the ball would put, you know what I mean?
So you'd no way. That,
yeah. And then we'd have things like the 35-yard line.
Yeah.
You couldn't be offside. You could never have a draw, so we had to have shootouts.
So, sorry, explain the 35-yard line, because I've never heard of that.
From the halfway line,
yeah,
you'd measure to the 35 yards. So within that 35-yard period, you couldn't, so from the halfway to the 35-yard, you couldn't be offside.
Right.
When you went past that 35-yard, you were offside.
So effectively, it's like being in your own half.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, that, you push you back. So this is the halfway line here. You'd have a line there.
I never knew
there.
That.
Yeah. And then I said that we'd have timeouts. So you're bashing each other 1 minute, next minute there's timeout. So you're having a chat. How are you doing? You're enjoying America? Yeah,
no way. On.
So that'd be 2 minutes because of the commercials.
Yeah.
And then you'd be back here again. And I said, then you'd never had to have a draw, you'd have a shootout.
Yeah.
So from the 35-yard line, you've got something like 5 seconds or 10 seconds to take the keeper on the score.
Yeah.
So it was different in that respect. And basically, you were always, like in Jacksonville, even night time, we played our games of night time, it'd be like 95 degrees. But you were expected to go there, go on the pitch, sign autographs and do television and whatever before the game.
Yeah.
It was all about the crowd and whatever, you know.
So at that point, you really wasn't missing Wolverhampton, was you?
Oh, no. Well, I saw my mum and dad came over to watch me play. We were playing against San Diego, and George Best was playing. And I always remember early in the second half, I got sent off. I was playing against this African gazelle.
Yeah.
And I just
couldn't catch him.
So this one time I hit him in the first half, got booked. Then I hit him in the second half, and I just remember him going about 5 yards, hitting this dugout thing where all the sports reporters were.
Yeah.
And they were drinking beer, and I just remember this supporter throwing the can off this African guy's head. And I got sent off, and it's one of those times I got sent off. And I had to walk all the way around the pitch, and I got cheered all the way around the pitch. It was one of my greatest experiences ever in my life.
Brilliant.
I was waving and saying thank
you. Like a lap of honour.
It was. And then very late into the game, we're winning 2-1. George Best scores from a corner, 2-2. And then we kick off, we break away, dubious offside, we score, 3-2. And so... The whistle goes after the goal, and then the next thing I just remember George Best chasing the referee and throwing punches at the referee, and next minute the referee sends George off, and then the crowd is shouting kill the ref, so you get six coppers come out with their guns out marching the referee off the pitch, like, you know.
So what an experience that was. I mean, was it a good lifestyle off the pitch as well?
I said I lived on a golf course, Bay Meadows. I said there was a lot of partying and doing that. But the good thing was I got involved with the Argentinians and the Mexicans and the Yugoslavians rather than the English side. Because apart from the two lads that I mentioned, they were good guys, Bomber Brown and that. The Argentinians, they'd just be keeping the ball up. Wherever we went to beach party, they'd have a football, keeping it up.
Yeah.
If you got three English guys, the other guys, they'd be drinking, you know what I mean?
It hasn't changed.
No, it hasn't changed, no.
So,
And Keith Burcham was there as well. Remember Keith Burcham?
Yes. Yeah.
He was there as well, yeah.
So, obviously, you say Birmingham City, you left... America, and that's when you had your chance, wasn't it, really, to play for your boyhood club?
Yeah. I came back and I remember Jim Smith, who was at Southend at the time, he phoned me up and said, will you come and play for me? And he said, I'll give you 30,000, which was a lot of money then.
Signing on fee?
Yeah.
I was going to say, if it was a week.
No. Not them days. And then I said, Ron Saunders got in touch with me, and I said to the man, I said, I really want to stay in the first division. I think if I drop down now at 26, I think I was, I said I probably won't get back up. So that's when I went to Birmingham with, what's his name? I can't think of his name now, the old Villa manager.
Ron Saunders.
Ron
Saunders.
And I know quite a few of the lads, but it wasn't a pleasant time. It was quite clicky and whatever, and Ron Saunders wasn't sort of the best manager and whatever. But I remember I got injured in training. So when I got into the side, I went into playing the reserves, and he put me in the midfield, and I was crap. And so he said, go up front. So I went up front, scored a goal and made a goal. And then from there, I'm always played centre forward for the Blues.
Oh, really?
For the next 16 games or so, yeah. So I was the centre forward for Birmingham City.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
There was also a chance, wasn't there, Colin, to join Leeds United at one point, wasn't there?
Yeah, that was one of them things that I think if a team come in and buy you, I think then you're made, then you're a part of the squad, a part of what's going on. Leeds had watched me, and my dad had told me that they watched me for over 6 months. And so we were all set to go. Got in the car one morning, and I think it's about 79, I think. And was told, yeah, we're going to go up there, meet Jimmy Armfield and whatever, and they want to sign you. And just before we started the car and took off, one of the lads come down and says, oh, Colt, sorry, it's called off. And I remember they said, well, Jimmy Armfield's just got the sack. So that was the end of my Leeds United career.
And obviously Leeds were a massive team there.
Massive team.
and yeah. could that, I mean, look, Colin, you had a great career, but could that have really been?
I think so. I think if you're bought, you know that you're wanted, you know you're going to be a part of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a place for you then, you know what I mean? So that would have been the making of me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that would have been a fantastic stadium to play with Nihil and Grode.
Yeah.
Back then.
They were a great side, from great players, you know. And it's about as you go through your career, learning off players.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You don't just become great, you know. The Bobby Charltons and the people, the Alan Balls of this world, they've learnt off all the pros as they go through. And I think that's the great thing.
So you say about learning off players. Obviously, your time at Wolves, you play with players like, obviously, Emlyn Hughes.
I wouldn't say Emlyn Hughes as much for me. People like Frankie Munro, who was just a great man.
I mean, tell us player. How good Frank was, because I've seen footage, I've heard how good he was, but you tell us in your words how good Frank Munro actually was.
I don't know. You know, some people, whatever they do, they don't learn it. They're just naturally great. And Frank was great with the ball, but then Frank was great with any ball.
Yep.
I remember going after training, we'd go and have a game of snooker with Frank, and he'd get a broom style, and he'd beat you at snooker with a broom style. You know what I mean? Any type of ball Frank was brilliant with.
Yeah.
But then just a nice guy.
He was.
That was the thing, what I loved so much about the Wolves, that the lads were such a nice bunch of lads. You know, we fought and we scrapped with each other.
Yeah.
But we got on so well, and it was a good group, you know. The John Riches, the Kenny Bits, Stevie Daly's, the Franks, John McCook, everybody, you know, even now, you know, like, I wasn't really a part of their squad in respect of sort of growing up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, like, you know, they're all, like, really good friends, and we have such a good time together.
I was going to say, look, I come to a lot of the events when you former players are there, and you literally do roll back the years like that, and you know, you're talking about things like it was yesterday, and they are a great, great set of lads, aren't they?
Oh yeah, they're superb. And they always have been, you know. I said, like Stevie Daly, when Steve was playing, when he left the Wolves for Man City, he was no doubtably the best midfield player at the Wolves, and probably, you know, in the first division at that time.
Yeah.
He ran the midfield, and deservedly, you know, 1.5 mil at the time, you know.
That was a lot of pressure, wasn't it?
Oh, sure it is at that time, you know what I mean?
£1.5 million, a lot of money now.
But then, like, you know, John Richards, who is out now, man mountain of a guy, you know what I mean? I don't think people knew how good John Richards was. You had to play against John to know how strong and powerful he was.
Did you actually, I mean, I know he was in the same team as him. Have you played against John in a competitive game?
Not really, but we played against each other in reserves and whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's competitive enough.
Oh, of course.
To know the players and whatever.
John scored 194 goals for Wolves. And I bet, you know, even when you was around the club, you know, seeing the goals he scored and how many he scored,
yeah,
you'd have surely thought that he's never going to be beaten, you know, and then up comes Bobby.
No. But he was just a nice guy, total gentleman. Everything about him, he exhumed, you know, as they call him, King John.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then you look at Kenny Abbott, why Kenny Abbott didn't play
For England,
30, 40 times. Because he was the best about, I think, at that time.
Why do you think he didn't?
Well, I think it was always that London thing, wasn't it? You know what I mean? You look at some of the players that played for England for 50, 60 games, and no way they were worth 50, 60 games.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I think it was just that London divide. Yeah. You know?
But Kenny was, it? I mean, you played
against him. The goals he scored and the...
Yeah, for midfield. And
yeah. But I said that team, you know, that team was a great team from the 74s upwards. You know, great blend of players and whatever.
Who was technically the... Because obviously you appreciate ball playing players, being one yourself. Who was technically the most gifted player, naturally gifted, that you played with in your time at Wolves?
Well, I'd probably have to say, thinking about and watching some of the games back, probably Kenny was. Kenny, you know, passing the ball, shooting... as a midfielder, I think he got everything as a midfielder, and he proved it. He scored a lot of goals in midfield. Yep. But the three of them, you know, him, Stevie, Willie, they were, you know, it was
Willie fantastic Carr.
Midfield team. And I think the best we ever had was Richards and Sunderland up front.
Yeah.
Why Sunday ever went, I don't know, because he was a top class player and he proved it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like I always said, the trouble with the Wolves is that they never had the movements of players, the team got all together. Because I always remember the time we, I think it's been about 80, in the late 80s, before John Barnwell got the sack, is that we went to the Villa and all the young players, me, Belly, Berry, Mel Eaves, a lot of us, Patching and whatever I think it was, we played the Villa that Friday and we beat the Villa 3-1. And the following week was the semi-final at Villa Park against Arsenal, and the Wolves lost 2-0 that day. And the Wolves were rubbish, but Arsenal were even worse. Yeah. But out of all the young kids there, I was the only one that was subbed that day. And from that day, that's when all the lads give the neck. They thought, I ain't bothered anymore, I'm going. Yeah. And a lot of them good players left. And then from there, that's the Wolves went down the leagues from there, because we'd all give the neck and we'd all left.
And they did go into quite a bit of a decline, didn't they?
Oh, hell yeah. Because they never kept that... you know, you look at Liverpool, you think, when did Souness go? When did, you know, the great players move on and leave the club? Well, it never happened to the Wolves. They kept... I'm not saying these guys were no good anymore, but you've got to have that natural flow of new players coming in to keep it fresh and keep it going. And there wasn't that. And that never happened to the Wolves, I don't think, you know. And Stevie Kindon, he said the same to me when we were talking about it.
Yeah. Going back to Steve Daly, obviously an old joke of his, and I'm sure this isn't true in your case, but you actually played for the England C team.
Yeah.
But in the infamous words of Steve Daly, is it because there wasn't an England D team?
Probably that.
No. So the England C team, how did that come about?
Well, I was just like, I say, when I finished football, I finished with Walsall at 30.
Yeah,
and I went to play for Kidderminster Harriers. The manager, Graham Allner, I was with him when I was 14. He was the first manager I've had in Sunday League football.
Yeah,
and I know Graham. Graham always wanted to just play football, and sort of that suited me. I could have gone to Shrewsbury and carried on playing pro, but Graham came in, and you know, I thought, well, I'll go out and try and enjoy the rest of my career with that. And, just by playing and doing well. With the
So you actually got into the England C team right at the back end of your career?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then, well, funnily enough, I had one game against Wales, and then I was all set to go and tour around Italy.
Right.
But the Wolves had got, we had the FA Trophy at Wembley against Burton Albion.
Oh, yeah, because Kidderminster had a lot of good cup runs, didn't they? Yeah.
We drew 0-0 in the Wembley at the final. And then we went to West Brom, played there, beat Burton 2-1.
Yeah.
And on that day I got injured, which basically finished my career. Got a bad tackle. And so that was my England career went as well. just the more good luck.
Just as you've reached your peak. Yeah. So, Colin, at 30, so you retired at 30.
Yeah.
I mean, flipping out. 30, you're still a very, very, very young man, and all of a sudden, effectively the end of your career as a footballer. Well, it must be hard.
Well, it was, but I was at Walsall, and for 3 years I played at Walsall, 115 games. Loved every minute, was sort of well respected there.
Yeah, you still are. He's highly revered by all your clubs.
And then they changed the manager, and he basically brought all his own young players in.
Who was the manager then?
Tommy Coakley.
Yes. Because he was just before Ken Ebert, wasn't he?
That's right.
Not long.
That's right, yeah. Well, he brought all the young kids in, and basically, you know, wasn't really needed. But then again, I can't remember the coach's name, and I always remember him coming in and, you guys are not fit, and it was run, where when Buckley was there, all we ever did was play five-a-side.
Yeah.
We played some great football at Walsall. We got to the semi-final of the League Cup, beat Arsenal 2-1, went to Liverpool in the semi-final, drew 2-2 at Liverpool, lost 2-0 at home, which, you know, but still played well. We had a great side. And then I'll say Tom coming broke it up, and I sort of then wasn't sort of in a good frame of mind, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I said I could have gone to Shrewsbury, but I thought now I'll go and enjoy my football for the last 5 or 6 years at Kidderminster. But, as I said, I was earning £170 a week before tax.
Yeah.
I went to Kidderminster, got £150 a week in my hand, got a job at £200 a week in a company car.
Yeah.
So that was the difference then. It was the looking after yourself money-wise as well.
So that's a brave move to make, because you know, some people would have said, right, I want to stop in the league or play in the league for as long as I can. But financially, it was better for you to drop into. And John Purdy said that actually recently. Mm-hmm. He said it was. Did you play at Kidderminster with John?
No.
Because John was there as well. And he said it was financially better for him to be at Kidderminster.
Well, there's a lot of good players them days that couldn't afford to go into the league, because with the amateur football and the jobs that they got, the money was so much better. It's like Kim Casey.
John mentioned him, actually.
Kim Casey was one of the finest finishers I've ever come across in football. You know what I mean? Cracking player.
Yeah.
And but he couldn't, Villa coming for him and teams like that, but he couldn't afford to go because the money wasn't good.
Because was he an insurance salesman?
Insurance, still is, yeah.
And he was making that much money selling insurance.
Yeah. Playing for Kiddie. And it was a cracking league as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you were playing some good football against some good sides.
Look, Kidderminster, to be honest, have always had a good name. Have always had a strong team. Yeah. And they've always been one of the local clubs which have captured a lot of players from Midlands clubs coming to the end of their career.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, and talking about the England thing, I was set to go with Steve and Mel with the England B around Asia.
Steve Daly and Mel Ease,
And I always remember one of the directors coming up to me, Marshall.
Yeah.
And he says, Colt, he says, you've been picked to go and play for England B, but you're too important to the side, so we're not letting you go. And so that was another, you know, as I said, if I didn't have bad luck, I'd have no luck at all.
I want to call you Colin Nearly Brazier. Yeah. So you nearly played for England B.
Yeah.
You nearly joined Leeds United in the pomp.
So far off.
You nearly come on as sub in the League Cup final. Yeah. So, obviously, Colin, since football, so you retired at 30, which is, by my maths, more than half your life ago.
Yeah, too long.
What have you done since?
It's like leaving football is like leaving school. It's always like leaving the army, you know what I mean? Everything's done for you. And then you've got to get in the world. You've got to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and go to work in the dark and come home in the dark. It's a massive, massive wake-up call.
Yeah.
But as I said, I was a plumber by trade, so I started my own plumbing business, heating business and things like that. And bit by bit, I've done about 20 different jobs in my time.
Yeah.
And then for the last 18 years, I fell into kitchen and bathroom and bedroom fitting whatever.
It's at this point we can plug your skills for that, because Colin has done both my bathrooms and my kitchen, and he's highly, highly recommended. He's highly skilled. I mean, to be fair, Colin, you know, going back to right the very start when your dad said get a trade, it would have been easy for your dad to live his dream through you and play football.
Yeah.
And your dad really has helped you in so many ways, because you've gone on to be a professional footballer. But ultimately, as well, it's gone full circle, and you've got a trade out of it as well.
Oh, definitely. And I say a lot of players that leave football in respect are always looking for, you know, not handouts, but help and things like that that they think that they deserve.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you know, you've been brought up, you've got to go out and find a job, and you've got to work full stop.
Yeah. So football, you know, really, you'd say, has never owed you a living, has it?
Not at all, no. You know, I like, the money was crap and everything, but I'd have gone...
Until you went to America.
I'd have gone and played football for nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, apart from my two children, the greatest day of my life is when I pulled out, I got dropped off by the guy that was looking after me doing the plumbing, and I said goodbye to him, and I walked to the house, and I was a professional footballer then. That was the greatest day, you know, at the time of my life, which a day that I'll never forget.
You are married, aren't you, Colin?
I am married.
We can edit this, because the greatest day of your life is when you got married. The second and third joint greatest days of life is having children, and the fourth was
the football.
So you're married now, and if you don't mind me saying, Colin, obviously you had children quite late on, didn't you?
Yep.
So how old are your children now?
James is 17 and Rose is 14.
So how old was you when you had James?
45, and then 48 when I had Rosie. Well, I didn't have them, the way.
Yeah. God, you can't take that offer as well. So obviously they'd never remember your career. So that have they watched you on YouTube and that? And have...
James has never played the game, really. He's, you know, it's all Xbox and whatever. But my daughter Rosie, she's the one that watches me on YouTube. She comes to the Wolves.
Yes, she does. Yes,
she says I can talk, represent England in talking about football.
Well, you've proved that, Colin, for the last 51 minutes 36 seconds.
To be honest, Jace, it's only by meeting you that I got back into, you know, I played 10 years for the old Wolves boys, but Wolves just didn't want anything to do with the old players in the times.
Yeah.
And it's only through meeting you that I got back into meeting guys. And then, you know, I'm saying that I didn't know really how respected I was with fans and whatever, because it had been, you know, 20, 25 years since I'd been up round, because you never had been invited back to the Molyneux and whatever, and so you just, you know, things just booted away from it.
Look, Colin, that means a lot for you to say that to me, and I think that's a big, one of the reasons I'm doing this. You know, I do know a lot of the ex-players, and a lot of them are now friends, and now the club are probably better than they've ever been at, you know, doing things for and with the ex-players. I think there was just a period for a good 15 years where, they're, you know, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I think that they saw the players more of a cost than an asset.
Mm.
And I think if it was inviting a player back, it'd cost them. What would they get for it? And I think really it's important that the history is remembered in the fabric of the club, because in 20 years' time, a certain player is going to be coming back to Molyneux who are in the current crop. I hope so. We don't know. So I think it's very important to protect your former players.
Well, football's all about history.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm saying, if the Wolves fans are so lucky to have the lads from the 70s and early 80s on their doorstep, because I've never, you know, the greats, like I said, Willie Carr, Kenny Ibbett, Stevie Daly, Parksy, you know what I mean? They're all at the do's. You can go and meet them anytime. Yeah. They'll talk... stand and talk to you for 4 or 5 hours about the game.
Yeah.
You won't shut them up. And to have that for a fan is a fantastic thing. But I think in probably 5 years' time, because we're all knocking on now, you ain't going to have that camaraderie of meeting the players, because not that these players probably don't want to do it, but they're foreigners. They'll go back to the south of France or to their homelands, and you probably won't have that group of players that you can you can talk to.
You made a point, Colin, that you'd have played the game for nothing, and you know, if you go and do a Q&A now and say you get 50 quid, or even if you don't get anything, you'd still do it if you got a couple of pints. Mm-hmm. You've got a motivation to do it, to speak to the former, to speak to the supporters, and meet up with any former teammates. Are players who are earning 50, 60, 70, 80,000 a week now, are they going to want to do that in 20 years' time? I don't know.
I don't think so, personally.
Yeah. You know.
It's like you say, it's nice to go, and you don't realise till you don't become a professional footballer, and you meet the fans and you find out how passionate people are. If professional footballers knew how passionate fans were.
Yeah.
Literally meeting them and being with them, because that, you know, it's life and death.
Yeah.
And especially with the Wolves, we would go on a tattered travel, you know what I mean? You know, the one lad called me legend. I said, I'm no legend. And he said, you wore the shirt, didn't you?
Yeah.
That makes you a legend.
Of course.
You know what I mean? And you don't realise the passion that's there.
Yeah.
And I don't think the set of lads that don't... I said, we parked our car, we walked in with the fans, we chatted to the fans before the game, chatted them after, went to the pubs and whatever, were a part of it, more so than they are today.
And I think John Purdy told an interesting story. He said he used to live near the ground. He used to walk across West Park, and bearing in mind it's before the days of social media and the internet and anything like that, and he said he'd walk across the park, he'd be playing that Saturday, and the supporters wouldn't recognise him. They'd be talking to him like a fan, saying, you know, who do you think is going to win today? One thing I wanted to make a point of as well, Clyne, which you've just... alluded to again, is a lot of the players back then. John Richards was born up north, Steve Daly as well, Derek Dugan, Frank Munro. A lot of these players, when they retired, stopped in Wolverhampton and made it their home.
Well, it's what's where the families, where the kids went to school and whatever.
Yeah.
You know, there's probably, I don't know, is there 16 or something like that around the, from Telford, Wolverhampton, you know, have all stayed where they are.
Yeah.
You know, and but it is like a family. They're such a good bunch of people. You know, I can honestly say that I love these guys, the Steve Dalys of this world. I'd have paid Steve Daly £1 million a year just to be in the dressing room.
He was that good.
He was that good. Even in our early days, you know what I mean? He was that good. He'd break the ice, he'd have everybody laughing, you know what I mean? The things that
we're doing. I hope he's not listening to this, because that's the last thing he needs.
Well, there's a lot of good people. I always feel sorry for Jerry Wara. You know Jerry.
Yeah, I know Jerry very well.
Jerry, I think Jerry would have been one of the best players in England if he hadn't had that terrible diseased ankle and whatever.
Yeah.
Because he was a great player with the ball. He could not make it his look at you, but he had a mindset for it. He was such a strong-willed mind. He would have been a great player.
He is. I've met Jerry, obviously. Well, I know Jerry very well, and what a bloke he is as well.
He is, yeah.
So, oh, you do a bit of work in it. Well, you've done it a couple of times, haven't you, Colin, in the museum at Wolves?
Yeah, well, I took, 20 Dutch guys round and two Mexicans. It's quite pleasurable. But I say, people are just... it's easy when you know... When football's been your life for such a long time, and people want to know the bits and pieces, the ins and outs.
Yes.
You know, it's easy to talk about. You know, people have always said to me, "Why didn't you go and do the talks?" I said, "Well, I've got nothing to talk about." Till you go out and people are asking you questions like this. Yeah. You can go on and on with the stories and the facts and the things that go on in your life. You don't realise till you sort of start. You know.
But the thing is, Colin, we're coming to the end now, obviously. 57, I mean, that was very, very interesting. You've told me a lot of things I didn't know. Obviously, for the people listening, you're going to tell them, obviously, a lot they didn't know. So, as the third inductee into the Wolf Whistle, I'd like to thank you for your time, Colin.
Pleasure.
And, thanks for playing for Wolves. And you are a legend. You wore the shirt.
Thank you.
Cheers, Colin.
Cheers, love.